Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Remarkably Me podcast with Anika Apple. I am really excited about this episode. I am blessed to have guest Monique Williams, who is a licensed clinical social worker, therapist, and also is the founder of a wellness coaching program. She's also the author of three really phenomenal journals, the Growth Book journals, and this is one of the three. She also has one for children and for adolescent girls. And she is a dynamo. Monique works with high-achieving professional Black women as her focus, also supports couples, and she, her wellness program is in its first cohort and getting ready to open up for the potential future cohort. So if you have missed the opportunity to sign up for that cohort at the timing of hearing this broadcast, you'll know that you will still want to check out her links in the show notes so that you have the opportunity to connect with her, follow her, and to hear more about what she's doing in her programs. Monique is an actively practicing therapist, and we certainly recognize more and more the need and really the requirement that we have to heal. And she is someone who walks the talk. In my short time of knowing her, we've had several conversations, and the examples of how she truly lives into her self-care, the excellence with which she has as she talks about her profession, which you hear throughout this podcast episode, but also her ability to just be present in her own experience and to share her learnings and journey make her a phenomenal therapist. I actually reached out to Monique. We share a community that we are a part of. And I actually reached out to Monique because she posted something about EMDR. And I shared with her, I was like, I've been looking to EMDR for years and really have been looking for a practitioner. Are you in Atlanta by chance? Are you in Georgia? Are you licensed in Georgia? And she actually recommended a couple of places for me to explore practitioners who do EMDR and might have the other qualifications that I was looking for in selecting a therapist. And I will tell you that her lead led me to the therapist that I use today. And so I'm ever grateful to her personally for that support in my own healing journey. And today I have the opportunity to be really grateful for what she shares in this episode that I know is going to bless and strengthen you. As we went through our episode, which I will turn over to you in just a second, Monique talked about her journey, the experience of navigating expectations, how much of expectations are out there that are simply created through our mindsets and through what we have watched and experienced others doing. She talks about transitioning and looking at shifting perspective. So transitioning from thoughts around failure as an example to I might be in a place of struggle, and how recognizing that is monumental in terms of the stories that you are telling yourself. She shares a bit about her wellness program, and we also talk about what it's like to be high achieving and some of the stories that we have told ourselves, may even be continuing to tell ourselves, that would be beneficial for us to explore more and to choose differently so that we can create an environment where we can thrive and be healthy and be happy and experience peace and joy. So I hope you will enjoy this episode. Thank you for spending some time with us. And without further ado, I give you Monique Williams and her remarkable story. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Remarkably Me podcast. I am so excited to be back with you again today. As you know, I'm Anika Apple, your host, and I have a brilliant guest with me today, Ms. Monique Williams. And Monique is here to share some incredible and remarkable healing stories about herself and her personal journey, but also has such an incredible gift that she can share about the experience of therapy. And I'm so excited that we get this twofold experience with her, because she's an expert in her field and has so generously agreed to share her own journey and some of the things that she has navigated through. I know you are going to enjoy hearing from her. When we met to just talk through some of the experiences she had, I mean, we talked and there was so much beauty in her healing journey and her commitment to see others and help them heal. So Monique, I'm so glad to have you here on the podcast. Thank you again for making the commitment to be here and to share your story. And I want to turn it over to you to do an introduction.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. As Anika stated, I'm Monique Williams. I am a Christian, a mom, child of God, a practice owner, a therapist. I wear a lot of hats, but the things most important to me are my relationship with Christ, my babies. I have two children, two girls, and of course, taking care of myself and my practice. And my practice is focused on supporting high-achieving professional Black women, which was born out of my own experience with anxiety and what that looked like for me. And through that and the pandemic, all led by Christ, came my practice.
Well, I love that. And you hit right where I want to ask, which is this piece around the pandemic. So actually, let's back up a step. Before the pandemic, you had a lot of experiences kind of going up and growing up in the world that led you to be a high achieving woman yourself. Mm-hmm. I remember you sharing that in college you were a double major. Tell me a little bit about where that road to high achievement started, because clearly it has been a part of your journey from the beginning.
Yeah. When I think about that, the first thing that comes to my mind is that was when I was a little bit crazier. Like, that was before I was more balanced. I was a double major. So I was a double major. I was also a resident assistant, and I was also working full time, which was way too much in hindsight. But I believe that it served its purpose at that time. It was through doing too much at the same time that I learned the importance of slowing down and focusing on being more centered. But yes, I grew up in a family where I was the youngest in a two-parent home. Yeah. Very kind of traditional roles between my parents. My mom was the homemaker. My dad was the breadwinner. It was that simple. Those two didn't cross a whole lot. Obviously, there was a lot going on behind the scenes between them, but we didn't know that as kids. We just thought mommy kind of runs things and daddy takes care of things professionally. I mean, financially, excuse me. But yeah, I feel like some of the major lessons I got from my parents, my mom was a very steadfast, get things done, do things in order. There's a way to do things, be kind to people, take care of yourself kind of person. However, I saw her always prioritizing us above herself. And so it was a journey for me to get to a place where I understood that prioritizing yourself first is what is ideal. My dad was very, very work-oriented, loved his family, but was work-oriented and always worked a lot. Sunday was his day of rest. That was the one day that he was like home all day, but he had a really strong work ethic. And I feel like that work ethic I took from my dad. He started talking to me about college from the time I understood words.
he was world.
And so college was an aspiration for me from the beginning. My mom was always talking to me about figuring out what you could do that brings you joy, but could also provide what is needed. And so I think between my dad's work ethic and his college push and my mom's, you can do anything, but figure out what's going to bring you joy and purpose in life. Mm-hmm. Those two came together and I chose to go to college for psychology initially. And then I learned that as a psych major, you can't really do all of the things you want to do or all of the things I wanted to do, I should say, until you get to the doctoral level. And I was like, well, I don't want to have to wait until I get my doctorate to be able to do the things that I feel called to do. So I started researching, had a great advisor, he pointed me in the direction of social work. And I was like, but I want to be a counselor. Why would I do social work? And then that's when I learned that through social work, you have lots and lots of different avenues, but you get a professional degree at the bachelor's level. And so I thought about replacing one with the other, but then I was like, I could get more bang for my buck if I just do both of them. I can use psychology for my electives in my social work major. And so I just double majored and came out with two degrees. But one of the biggest lessons that I learned in college is you don't have to do everything at the same time. And it's okay to be present in your experiences, because otherwise you're just going and going and going, but you're not really experiencing it. You're just doing. It's just the list. It's just the pushing on to whatever is next on the list, which wasn't healthy. And I actually had an experience in college where I got sick. And I think that it was just because I was doing too much and I wasn't resting enough. It was more doing than it was being. And I didn't learn what being really meant until I was a real adult outside of college, living on my own. Yeah. But yeah, that's where my high achievement started at the collegiate level, because in high school, I was senior class president. I was captain of the step team. I was involved in all the different clubs. It took me a while to learn that I didn't have to do all things to be satisfied and be enough.
I see all of that. And there's so much synergy between our stories and this kind of mindset that was embedded really early on about about high achievement. That became a part of who we were. And what I see often now, and I'm curious about what your experience is in your practice, but that people are experiencing such high levels of burnout. And when you trace back, like, well, how long have you been going the way that you're going? It's like, for as long as I've been able to go. Like, it's so deeply rooted. Is that what you see?
Yes. So part of my work is I do EMDR work. And that's eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing. It's an approach that was created to treat trauma, but has since been adapted to treat anxiety, depression, grief, et cetera. But one of the things that often we do is called the float back method. And it gives you the opportunity to think about where the root of whatever the challenge is started. And so one of the questions I often ask my clients is, when is the earliest time that you remember feeling or experiencing this thing? And when we're talking about that high achievement or that imposter syndrome or that perfectionist behavior, which all is directly attached to high achievement, usually the response is as far back as I can remember. Like, they don't remember a time in their lives where that was not the case, even in childhood. So yes, that is very much what I find in my practice.
And I will double down on that because and I shared with Monique, and for those of you that may not have heard this part of my story, I recently started the EMDR process as well. And the first EMDR target for me was, they're all going to find out I'm a failure. Mm-hmm. And that's where we started. It morphed from there. There was definitely some more, some deeper levels of the target, but it was like, who said you were responsible to know everything and do everything? And where did that come from? And I was like, well, I mean, isn't that what everybody expected? Oh, wait, I established that for myself. Mm-hmm. And what was so powerful in going through EMDR is that what I realized as we were going back the reprocessing, it's like, I decided that that's what everybody else expected of me, but I had all the reasons to believe it. Like, I had collected the proof of why it was right. True. So powerful. Mm-hmm. Share if you will, not anything specific, obviously, because we want to honor the privacy that right. you have with your clients, but mm-hmm. any like big transformations that you can share in a very general way, just so that people understand the power that exists in this modality.
Yes. So I think a lot of the clients that I work with are struggling with anxiety and depression. Those are the common colds of mental health. And they're called the common colds because they are the things that you experience sometimes unexpectedly. You don't have control over them happening per se, but it's common for it to happen. And age and sex and these things, now there are, of course, statistics that show where it's more prevalent, but pretty much anyone can be exposed to symptoms of anxiety and depression, just as anyone can be exposed to germs that lead to a cold. Yeah. And in treating anxiety, I have found that a lot of the transformation comes in not only when we can identify the root of where it came from, but when we can start to identify what folks have been telling themselves about whatever that thing is, and then begin to do the work to identify what needs to change. And some of what has come out pretty consistently across clients is that flexibility, self-care, and mindset are all very powerful parts of changing that experience. So flexibility meaning, you know, what works for you one day and is great for you and your body and your mind one day may not be great the next day. Being able to pivot as needed and recognizing that your priority is how you take care of yourself in every experience that you have. So that's as a mom, that's as an employee, that's as an individual, that's as a church member. In whatever hats you wear, how you take care of yourself is going to directly impact how you feel. So when I work with clients on how they take care of themselves, and I mean self-care beyond the surface, so spiritual self-care, emotional self-care, financial self-care, self-care in all of the ways. And then we work on being intentional about prioritizing self, and that helps to transform the way that you think about things. But shifting perspective is a big part of changing the way that we think about things. So for example, if I'm thinking that it is selfish for me to take care of myself first, then that could include feelings of guilt. And that could include me feeling like it's somehow wrong. There could be shame associated with that. And these are very strong feelings that can have an effect on the choices that we make and our actions. But if I shift that mindset to when I take care of myself first, I am also taking care of anyone and anything that I love, then that's a totally different experience. Because the better I take care of me, the better me I am for everyone and everything that I love as well. But the better me that I am for me first. And I have found that especially because I focus on working with professional Black women, that's something that we need to hear. And that's something that we need to be intentional about working on, because no one tells professional Black women it's okay to take care of yourself. It's okay to prioritize yourself. That's not something that we hear.
Yeah, we both experience such journeys where, you know, it's high achieving and then the overwhelm, anxiety, stress, even navigating through grief. Yeah. It's like there is, and I want to go there next with you because I know you experienced going through some grief when you were in college. Mm-hmm. And just identifying, first of all, allowing yourself to really feel, mm-hmm. to experience your feelings, and then knowing what to do as you're navigating through, or knowing how to say, I don't know what to do and I need help. And those are all pieces that we still are on a journey to really normalize in our culture. Yes. Right? Hey, everyone, pardon the interruption, but I just wanted to pause for a moment and remind you that you are not alone. There are so many talented providers who are out there that have the skill and expertise to support you in wherever you find yourself in your journey. I'm a big proponent of therapy. It has been pivotal for me, and I had the front row seat to observing my mom in the years that she's run her therapy practice as a nurse psychotherapist. I know the transformation that comes from it. We've included in the show notes a couple of links to help you find and explore therapy. And of course, we've included the contact information for our special guest, Monique Williams, who is actively practicing. And so we want you to find the resources and do the things necessary for you to heal. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that I am the founder of the Healing Crusade. And the Healing Crusade provides an opportunity for you to do your healing work individually and as a part of a collective. We look at healing across emotional, mental, physical, and spiritual. And we do weekly challenges to create space for you to explore it in a way that brings some energy and some light and helps you to do the introspection and excavation required for you to be on your healing journey. For more information about the Healing Crusade, you can visit my website at anikaapple.com/thehealingcrusade. Or you can look in the show notes for a link. Thanks so much. And I now return you back to our show.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about your experience.
So yeah, when I was in college as a double major with a full-time job, doing all the things and doing quite frankly too much at the same time, I also experienced a loss. So I had an aunt die And I was close enough to her, to be completely transparent. We didn't have a specifically close relationship, but she was my family.
Yeah.
And she was here, and then she wasn't. And that was the first time that I had really experienced grief. So I had a grandparent pass when I was a kid, but I was so young that I don't even remember whatever the impact was. But because I never really experienced grief until I was an adult, I didn't know how to manage it. I didn't know what to expect. I couldn't identify what I was feeling and why I was feeling it. I remember feeling like there was something wrong with me. I was like, why am I struggling to focus? Why am I so distracted? Why am I forgetting things? Why am I feeling less organized? These are all common symptoms associated with when you're managing grief, but no one had identified that for me. And so I did not recognize that it was perfectly okay for me to feel those things, for me to be struggling. But again, no one tells us as Black women it's okay for us to struggle. People tell us to smile and keep moving and take care of everybody else. And then if there's something left, take care of ourselves. Like that's a message we get personally. We get it from family, even when it's unintentional. We get it in the church setting. We get it professionally. We get it all around us. You know, when you're at work and you're high achieving, especially as a Black woman who is essentially taught that you need to do more in order to be viewed on the same level as your counterparts. So then you get praise for doing more. You get praise for going above and beyond to a point that you're taking away from yourself. And then that becomes normalized. So no one tells us it's okay to not be okay. So when I wasn't okay, which was absolutely okay because I was grieving, I didn't know that it was okay. And so there was so much self-doubt and confusion and shame around not being at my best because I grew up watching my mom be the one who looked like she had it all together. She was the one that everybody went to in the family when something was needed. She was the one that even when she was struggling, she would just put a smile on her face and she would figure out how to put one foot in front of the other. But from a child's perspective, she just looked strong and she just looked like she had it all together.
Yep.
And back then, that was the definition of strong that I believed in. You're supposed to have it all together. You're supposed to look good at all times. You're supposed to look like you're fine, even when you are not. And that's not something I ascribe to anymore. I don't believe in that whatsoever. I believe now that there is strength in being able to be vulnerable. There's strength in how you take care of yourself. There's strength in giving yourself grace. There's strength in showing yourself compassion. And it's okay to not be okay. But we don't hear these things. So when you kind of figure these things out in your own journey, like I was doing in that experience of grief in college, it's really challenging.
It's perfect segue actually to go into Strength Redefined. I'd love for you to take that journey of now. So you've had this experience of grief. You've watched, you know, what the traditional Black family and really our roles of Black women in the Black family look like, where no one gives us the real truth of like, you got to figure out how to take care of yourself, but like nobody talks about that, right? To defining it with vulnerability. It's funny because it's one of the things that I specifically wrote down. How? Because vulnerability tends to be looked at something that is so synonymous with like weakness.
Mm-hmm.
A personal journey says it is exactly the opposite. I still am on a journey to be more comfortable being vulnerable, but this is a huge unlock. Talk about your experience and what you are helping other women to do in the journey of your practice and your programs.
So my practice, the reason that I named it Strength Redefined is because of exactly what I was saying a minute ago, like you said, perfect segue, about the way that I once defined strength and then the way that I had to learn to redefine it. So key point, I remember when the pandemic started, so everything shut down in March of 2020. In March of 2020, I was 8 months pregnant with my second child. My first was only six. She was therefore having to be homeschooled. So I'm homeschooling her. I am 8 months pregnant. And for anyone who's ever been pregnant, that's the most uncomfortable time in pregnancy. So I'm dealing with that. I'm also working full time. At the time, I was a full time professor. And I was also doing my clinical work part time. So I'm a wife. I'm a mom. Second child on the way. Working full time as well as working part time. Not realizing that I'm not doing a great job of taking care of myself. So I like to use scales. And on a scale of 0 to 10, where 10 is the best, I was probably taking care of myself at about a 5, maybe 6 when I was being intentional, because I was like, you're carrying life. You have to take better care of yourself. And when those reminders came in, then it was more like a 6 or a 7. But even at a 6 or a 7, I wasn't at my best. So in comes the pandemic. And now I'm struggling even more, because now there's this thing and we don't really know what it is. And we know that it's killing people, or we know that people are dying, and it's you know, being related to this is what we're being told. And lots of people are going into the hospital and they're not coming back out. Or you have to go into a hospital where people are sick. Yep, and yeah. At the time, I'm about to have a baby. And so my anxiety was through the roof. Had my baby girl, was so scared to go into the hospital. And at this point, I'm telling myself, you just got to be strong. You just got to push through this. Not even giving myself the space to identify what I'm actually feeling, but just telling myself, you got to be strong. You got to push through this. You got a baby girl who is dependent on you, my 6-year-old. You got another baby girl on the way. You got to do what you got to do. So I go into the hospital. I have the baby. It was a rough pregnancy. It was an even rougher delivery. The labor and delivery was really challenging. I always joke and say, if I had my second child first, I might only have one kid, or I might have adopted after that, because the second one was rough, but worth it. She's amazing. But I remember that my anxiety was at an all-time high. So I come home from the hospital. My husband is home with me. My little one's not there for the first few days, just so we can get settled with the baby. And I am struggling. I'm having crying episodes. I'm feeling sad all the time. Postpartum depression. I didn't even identify it as postpartum depression, despite the fact that I'm a therapist at the time. But it's much easier to be objective and see these things in other people than it is to see it in yourself. So I am having crying episodes, having chest pains, feeling like there's this lump in my throat at all times, struggling to sleep, feeling like I'm not enough, feeling like I'm failing as a mom. All of this is happening at the same time. And it took me a good couple of months to realize I'm dealing with postpartum depression and I'm dealing with anxiety. And I remember thinking, if I have a husband, family support, great friends, and I'm a therapist, so I have the training and knowledge and understanding and experience, and I'm struggling like this, there must be so many other women out there that look like me who don't even have all of those advantages that are also struggling. And that was when I realized, I mean, I've always known that I wanted to have a private practice, and I've always known that I wanted it to have sort of a holistic feel. And I had an idea, but I never knew what specific population I wanted to support until I went through my own struggle with anxiety. And then God made it clear that's who I was supposed to be supporting. And so I started my practice, named it Strength Redefined, and it's been focused on supporting high achieving professional Black women since I opened, and still is.
So similar to you, when I went through postpartum, when I was experiencing the anxiety and overwhelm that created really this hitting the wall, that's what I call it, a couple of years ago, I felt the same way. This piece of like, but I should have it all figured out, which by the way, goes back to my EMDR target, right?
Right.
Like I know this, I'm supposed to know. And you talk even in your journal, which we'll share in a moment, about being the friend who's the strong friend, right? Yeah. And I'm like, I'm the strong friend. So I'm supposed to have it figured out. And all of these stories I'm telling myself were just creating a deeper mound of shame for me.
Yes.
And it's like there is something so salient, and this is why I say I'm so grateful that you started your practice, because there are, or you've extended your program and the journal and resources for your practice, because we simply don't know. We haven't had all of the years of learning that self-care is required for us.
Right.
We didn't know that healing was required. We quite honestly don't even recognize all of what we're healing. Mm-hmm. Like when I think about the healing crusade and the work there, a lot of times what we are tapping into are things that we can trace back generationally beyond our lifetime.
Absolutely.
Hey everyone, I hope you are enjoying the episode thus far. Just wanted to stop for a moment and make sure that I extend the opportunity to you for my coaching and advisorship programs. As you know, I am a trusted advisor and I take on a small number of coaching clients and advisory clients every year. Right now, I do have a few spots available for both, and the links will be in the bio and show notes. So please make sure you take a look at those. And while you're there, click like and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any of the upcoming episodes. As always, thanks for listening, and I'll return you back to the episode. It's so incredible.
I agree. And in my experience, I was looking for, so shortly after I started my practice, I was looking for resources, first of all, that reflected us. Because it's important to have representation in the things that are around us and the things we choose to use. And I was looking for a resource that could help work on anxiety, work on self-perception, work on the symptoms that can be associated with depression, et cetera. And I was really struggling to find what I was looking for. And then I promise you, it came from God and not from me, because I never intended to create a workbook and a journal. I actually thought that I was going to be creating a planner when I first started. And we moved from a planner to a workbook and a journal. So that's my my growth book journal. It's all about growth, and it's focused on teaching the coping skills, some soft skills that will help to reduce the feelings associated with anxiety and stress and depression and life transitions. And I wanted to make sure that it had tangible skills in it so that it was actually useful, but also that it encouraged journaling, because journaling is a really powerful tool that we don't talk about a lot. But sometimes when you don't know what to say, or you don't have the person to say it to, or you just don't have the courage to say it out loud, another way to be able to release things is to journal. It also helps you to be present in the current moment, which is one of the ways we decrease feelings of anxiety and stress as well, through mindfulness, through being present. And so I created my growth book journal. This is my baby. So this was my first baby. I have three now. So I have one focused on children, which is my second baby. And this one helps to teach social and emotional learning. So I have children. I've also worked in the school system. And these kids are mostly getting what they need academically, but the social and emotional component is really lacking. And in fairness, teachers are not taught to teach the social and emotional component. They're taught to do what needs to be done academically, but they struggle with the social and emotional component that comes into the classroom as well. And so that's why they have other resources in place, like I was a therapist in a school setting. So that's where the children's options came from. And then this is the adolescent one. And so these focus on social and emotional learning, which is teaching, for the younger ones, it's teaching how to identify emotions. What are your emotions? Can you name your emotions? Do you understand what they mean? Because at the very basic level, emotions are data. It's information. It's telling you something. It's an opportunity to learn something about yourself. So it's that foundational piece. And then teaching our young ones how to make healthy friend choices, because it's important who we choose to associate ourselves with and who we allow into our lives and our space and our hearts. So it starts with that. And then the adolescent one builds on that and teaches how to make healthy partner relationship choices, how to be intentional about your self-care, how to set goals, so creating SMART goals, and then learning how to actually go from the goal to implementation to reaching the goal. So different skills that our young people need, but my primary baby was my growth book journal. And from that grew a program. So I have a mental wellness coaching program, which I just recently launched, that I'm really, really excited about. It offers the opportunity to grow together in community. So you are walking through a 12-week curriculum where you learn and practice a new skill each week. I work with participants throughout the program, but they also build community with one another because they're walking through the program together. And they're walking away with at least 10 tangible coping skills that they're going to learn and practice during the course of the curriculum, until the 12th week where you graduate. And then you set your plan for how you're going to be intentional about maintaining all of the growth and progress that has taken place. So that's really exciting for me. And is also focused specifically on high achieving professional Black women.
That is awesome. I'm so excited to even hear more about the journey and the learnings and the stories that come out of the experiences that people have going through it. I am so grateful, Monique, for you and your pulling all of your experiences in to help strengthen who we are. And so thank you for that. I imagine that our listeners will be interested in your journals. I definitely am going to get the adolescent one for my kids because I know that they will benefit from having it just simply from the examples that you gave. I'm like, oh, this is spot on. And and I love that when things have a common language, mm-hmm. it gives you the opportunity to really speak to your kids and to listen to them from a place of understanding versus talking at them. And so tools like this can be so powerful. We also are going to give away a copy of your original growth book journal. So I'm excited. We'll have that information in the show notes. So you all can check that out there. And we'll also put all of Monique's contact information there as well, as well as a link for her practice and her program. So lots of opportunities to stay connected. As we are nearing the end of our time, Monique, mm-hmm. I wonder if you might share a couple of ideas, maybe an example from your own life and a couple of ideas that you have for our listeners around the title for our podcast. So I consider remarkable to be worthy of note. You know, creating a remarkable life is about creating a life less ordinary, something that is uniquely yours, that when you look back at the fingerprints that you have left across a lifetime, it's something you are so grateful to have had the opportunity to experience and to share with others. What's maybe a way that you have been focused on creating your remarkable life, and maybe a couple of tips for the audience?
I think that for me personally, I know that I keep talking about self-care, but that underpins everything that I do. When I started being intentional about how I take care of myself and understanding what my needs are and that those things are priority, that is what started moving my life in the direction of remarkable. I was no longer burdened with being responsible for other people's emotions and other people's needs. I allowed others to take responsibility for their needs, and I focused on taking responsibility for my own. And I learned to affirm myself. So that's definitely a second thing that I would recommend. So the first is be intentional about your self-care. And that means asking yourself, what do I need? What do I need physically? What do I need emotionally? What do I need spiritually? What do I need to do or not do, to have or let go of, in order for me to feel grounded, to feel joy, to feel safe, to feel well taken care of? That's where self-care starts. Now, the basic pillars of self-care: move your body, mm-hmm. eat well, drink water, get enough sleep, of course. But then beyond that, begin to ask yourself, what do I need to do to increase the intention of peace and joy in my life and how I take care of myself? And yes, go ahead.
It's just going to say that you gave some specific questions, like to ask yourself around peace and joy, because I think that sometimes when we are out of the practice of identifying self-care, it's like, but I don't even know what it looks like. Like, right. What do I do? I'm just trying to make sure that I get to bed on time, that I exercise. Mm-hmm. So giving the framework of thinking about bringing in more peace, more love, more joy into your life does help create a little bit more context. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. And the other thing I would say is make sure that your sleep is restful sleep. Because we hear people talk about sleep often, and sleep is huge in terms of how it underpins how we feel. If you can have the best intentions for your day, but if you're waking up feeling tired, you're already nowhere near that 10 out of 10. You're already starting at a lower level, because that tiredness is going to make you less patient. You're going to be more irritable. It actually affects the way that your brain processes things. So that means it affects how you think about things. It affects your perspective. And all of this is going to affect how you feel and the way that your day goes. So being intentional about not only getting enough sleep, but creating a good sleep routine, making sure you have a good sleep environment, because when you wake up rested, then you are in an ideal position to be able to do the things to take care of yourself first, and then also to take care of and love and pour into everyone and everything else that is important to you. When your cup is full, that's for you. the overflow, that's for everybody else.
I love that. I knew you were going to go to self-care because it's one of the things that is truly a hallmark of who you are. I will honor that as Monique and I've had a chance to connect and to talk. Like, she can give you examples of what she is doing to take care of herself. Like, she is serious about it. And it's inspiring and encouraging. And I am grateful to have the opportunity to connect with you and to learn from your experiences and your stories. So thank you, Monique, again, for coming to share your stories with us. Would you like to just list out anything exciting on its way? And again, we'll have all the ways to connect with you in the show notes.
Yes. So the most exciting thing on its way at the moment is the wellness coaching program. So I just recently launched it. We'll be starting our first cohort probably in February or March. So about the time that folks will be seeing this is about the time that you would have the opportunity to reach out, learn more, potentially sign up, get more information. And that is going to be a transformative journey. That is, like everything else in my practice, something that God revealed to me. And I'm so excited to be able to share it with others and support women like you and I.
So awesome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Oh, such an honor. And we look forward to seeing you back on the Remarkably Me podcast next week. As always, peace and blessings.